So I said to Big Hair, why don't we take this supercars in review thing and go one more step and rate the drivers? To which he said, how? Well, here's how, Niv. It would be simple if we only had to measure one race, but we can't do that since most supercar weekends have more than one race. And this year, it's also been a battle of tyre life. So we have to look at the whole weekend as one picture, and that means one great race can be spoiled by poor effort in another. We also take into account the relative position of each team against the other. And that means that we're not saying Team Sydney is going to be Red Bull Racing Australia. So, how does it work? 10-point weekend would be perfect. Great racecraft, a sensational implementation of strategy, and scoring the best results possible for that car and that team. A 9 or 8's a very good weekend, barely putting a foot wrong on the way to good points haul, but little spots for improvement. 7 and 6 points is around a pass score, we think, with a few mistakes dragging the score down. 5 and below, there's room for improvement. And that is how the Supercars in Review ratings works.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to our final driver ratings of 2020, the year of our COVID. This is after the Bathurst one, obviously, so we're going to have double the amount. We're going to rate also the co-drivers as well as the main game drivers for this. I'm actually joined by Clarkey. How you going, Clarkey?
Not bad at all, Nev. Rating 50 drivers is a bit of a handful, but that's what we've done. 50 drivers, all co-drivers have a rating as well as the main guys, and we'll see who stars, and there's one in there in particular which I think rates incredibly well as a co-driver.
Well, if it's a handful, you're the man for the job. So Let's get into it. The wildcard team, GRM, first driver up, Tyler Everingham, you scored him a 6.
Yeah, it was both of the drivers, so Jaden Ojeda as well, very much a learning weekend for them. They came in with a team that hasn't run the rest of the season, so you're on the back foot right from the start. So Tyler bruised the car in the race, and Jaden bruised the car in practice, so they both had a fair crack at the walls, which is a good learning experience for Bathurst, I think. But it's just one of those weekends, I think, for the young guys. It's all about understanding the place. You're learning a new engineer, you're learning a new car, you're learning the whole lot. So tough weekend for two guys to just step in and expect to do too well at that. So 6 is a fair price.
So you reckon Jaden and Tyler, what, they were equal in their performance over the weekend? Forget the shenanigans.
But they both raced well as well. I mean, Tyler in particular in that first stint was competing with some of the guys down the back of the field, like they were swapping spots and racing, which I thought was quite good from where they came from. So, you know, you could have possibly made an argument for Tyler to get a 7, but he did crash the car in the race. So, you know, you'll find my ratings are very harsh on people who crashed in the race.
Yeah, fair enough. Next up, Team Sydney. And first up is Alex Davison. You reckon this is his best weekend of the year?
Absolutely. He was really good this weekend. I mean, he was inside the top 10 in one of the practice sessions on pure pace. It wasn't just a fluke. It was a pure pace top 10. And then, of course, he's got his best result of the year. And that's why we've given him an 8 for the weekend. So I was a bit tempted to go for a 9. But overall, I thought a bit of inconsistency through the practice sessions and certainly not putting it down on the track when it was required in qualifying was costly. Could have been a top 10 shootout car.
Really? Top 10 shootout car?
Yep. And the reason for that, Nev, is his co-driver.
Really?
So John O'Webb did a sensational job in that car. He helped to clean it up, to sort it out, to make it handle better and do all the things that it hadn't been doing. And that's where the value of such an experienced co-driver comes into it. Even if he's only racing once a year, his input was phenomenal.
So what did you score Jonathan Webb?
He got an 8 as well. So,
he got the same as Alex, even though you felt like he sorted the car out for him.
Yeah. Well, the co-driver's got a job to do. And the co-driver's job is to test So give them a task, test it, make sure it works. Don't do anything stupid. Please don't hit the wall. Don't hit another car. All of those sort of things. Keep it steady and bring it back in one piece during the race. So, you know, Jono did that. Eight's above average. So, you know, eight's a pretty good score, I think, for a guy who races once a year.
The one thing a co-driver doesn't have to do is set the car up, though.
No, but they do have to test things, you know. So the challenge is, okay, we want to test the front end this session, so we're going to do this and that, whatever. So the co-driver's got to be able to give the feedback that comes their way. And obviously Jono Webb's knowledge and insight into that team, given he owns the bloody thing, is really good in terms of his rapport with the engineers. So it helped him as well.
Okay. Teammate, Chris Pither. He scored a 6. His teammate or co-driver was Steve Owen. You've also scored him a 6. But Chris struggled, you reckon? Steve struggled in a poor handling car?
Yeah, well, the car clearly wasn't as good as the other car in the team. So, yeah, you've got to say that they were on the back foot. They were struggling. The reason why is always hard to pinpoint. So I think teams that are cash struggled. And I don't think that team's got money coming out of its ears. It has to make choices, and I think if you're going to sacrifice a car, you're going to sacrifice the one that the team owner's not going into. So I think their car wasn't as good as the other one, but, you know, qualified 23rd. They just didn't look anything special, and he finished 16th. So, and Steve Owen just simply didn't get a chance to see whether he was still any good or not.
Maybe they should have put Jonathan Webb in Chris's car to set it up.
Yeah, well, or steal the things. But it's probably not even about setup. It's probably about the equipment. You know, so remember, that team struggled. They missed the two races at Tail and Bend because they didn't have a spare engine floating around. So they haven't got a lot of parts. So, you know, if you've got a dud engine and you've got a good engine, you can only put one in one car. You can't put it in both. So I think, you know, the team leader, which is Alex Davis, and more so than Jono Webb. But, you know, I think they just went that way.
Okay, Matt Stone Racing. Zane Goddard, you scored him a 6.
Yeah, he would have got more, but he crashed in the race. So instant point off for the crash. So, yeah, it's just one of those things. I think both he and his teammate, Jake Kostecki, who in the Superlight swapped the car around during the year, they came to Bathurst and they were the freshest of the co-drivers, whichever one you want to call the co-driver. So nominally, Zane was the co-driver, I think, and Jake was the main driver. And Jake ended up winning their little battle in the shootout to win the qualifying of the car, so he got to qualify. Unfortunately, he crashed and didn't set a time, really. So they started 25th, which is really not that great. And then Zane crashed it in the race fairly early, and they finished, well, they were the second car out after Jamie Wincup. So, yeah, not a good weekend, but a good weekend. It's one of those ones where you just got mixed emotions about it. I quite liked what I saw, but I was a bit disappointed with the two crashes.
Well, you did score, Jake. Kostecki, an 8. So why would he have got an 8, whereas Zane got a 6?
Jake didn't crash in the race. He only crashed in qualifying. And Jake was just a little bit faster and a little bit more consistent across the weekend.
So if Jake didn't crash, he would have got a 9?
No, because Zane was the one who crashed. So, no, probably wouldn't have got an extra 1 for that. I mean, it's always hard. Bathurst, as we know, it's the toughest track they come to, you know, and you're really looking for little bits of time you can grab here and there. So I think, you know, a young guy having a crash in qualifying is not such a bad thing. I'd rather they were having a go than driving like a pussy.
Okay. The next Matt Stone Racing car, Gary Jacobson, and co-piloted with David Russell. You both scored them a 7. Those guys just tend to have a steady weekend.
Yeah, it was nothing special, was it? It was just a weekend. They didn't make any big mistakes. They didn't set the world on fire, although Gary was quite quick in one of the sessions and David was quite quick in one of the sessions. But, you know, they were just there. They did the things they needed to do. Engine problems, of course, really kind of ruined their day. They were early DNFs because of the engine dramas. So when you do that, you lose a whole bunch of laps to assess them on. So I think they were, you know, pulled out at about 50, 60 laps into it. So, you know, didn't get a lot of laps.
Kelly Racing and Rick Kelly, who I was hoping would do a bit better, you scored him a 6 and his co-driver was Dale Wood and you scored Dale an 8.
Yeah, Dale was really good. He was quite fast in some of the practice sessions that were co-driver only, and you know, inside the top 10 or inside the top handful at any given moment in a practice session. So he extracted the best out of the car. Rick, of course, who we were hoping for the speed and for the brilliance that we've seen from him in the past, we just didn't see that. So whether he was comfortable in the car, whether it was something else, I'm not sure. And then, of course, the clutch problems early in the race crueled the whole day for the pair, and they finished 17 laps off the pace in 17th, coincidentally. And, I just thought I wanted a little bit more out of Rick. I wanted some fireworks from him, but I didn't get it.
Next to the Kelly Racing cars, Andre Heimgartner and Dylan O'Keefe, you both scored them a 7. I thought Andre, well, I was looking forward to him doing a little bit more, but, you know, some strategies in that didn't quite play out for him.
Yeah, well, it starts with qualifying. I think Andre had a car fast enough to be in the shootout, and the fact that he missed the shootout cost him a point. So, you know, we drop him down a little bit just because of that alone. And then, as you say, in the race, it was just there, you know. They weren't doing anything over the top. They weren't doing anything ridiculous. They just plodded along and they ended up in 11th. And we know that the cars are hard to pass in, but, you know, we could have got a little bit more, and that could have been helped if Andre had qualified that a little bit better. Dylan, of course, was on debut and didn't put a foot wrong, but he also didn't, you know, jump out of the box and wow us all. So, you know, they both get 7s, which is par for the course.
Next up, Team 18, Mark Winterbottom and James Golding. You scored them an 8. Mark, we looked good, but then struggled a little bit in the rain. James, I think, just kept his nose clean.
Yeah, now Mark actually went well in the rain. He picked up spots in the rain and got themselves up to 5th spot on pure speed, which was pretty impressive when you consider they started in 18th spot and probably would have finished in 6th at the end of it if it hadn't been for the engine problems that just sapped the energy out of the car late in the thing. But again, it's the same story we've had all year. They've got to qualify better. You can't qualify 18th in a race like this and expect to do really well. So must get qualifying speed. James was really good, I thought, in patches. You know, we saw one really good practice session from him where he looked a real contender, and he raced quite well in the race. But of course, you know, he was the victim of the shift light problem, which meant he started the race in 2nd gear and was well and truly last by corner 1.
So was that all the problems you had at the race start? Was just dumping himself down in last spot?
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, would have been frustrating, I reckon, to be toddling off the line and watching everybody go past you. Even if you are in 18th, there's still 7 cars to go past you, and they all did.
So you said it was shift light problems.
Yeah, shift light. So shift indicator. So it was indicating that he was in a different gear to what he was in.
Really?
So he thought he was in 1st gear.
So you didn't take notice of that shift lights at all from then on because you could have been in the wrong gear.
I think the little shift lights on the steering wheel that flash, you pay attention to those, but the one that says what gear you're in, you're going to ignore that one.
Oh, yeah.
You might find you're in 22nd gear.
Okay.
I got a truck.
Okay. Next for Team 18, Scott Pye and his co-drivers, Dean Fiore. They both also scored an 8. Scott raced well. Struggled in qualifying. Dean Fiore, again, a good journeyman's drive.
Yeah, you could possibly say that Dean's drive wasn't good enough for an 8, but you know, he sort of sat in that 10th to 12th position after getting up there early in his stint. And, you know, you could say, well, maybe he should have got more, but it is hard to pass in these things. And the fact that he got up to there in the first place is what he gets his credit for. And again, didn't do anything stupid. He just did what he had to do. Whereas Scotty Pye was good. He was one of the few guys who could actually pass people on the track. And he ended up getting that 6th spot at the end of the race when Frosty dropped behind him. So, you know, good, not a bad result when you're considering you qualified 12th. But again, got to qualify better, guys. Find that single lap speed for us.
Okay. First of the BJR cars, Todd Hazelwood. His co-driver was Jordan Boys. Todd scored a 6, and Jordan, you've given him a 6, but he crashed out of the race. How can he be the same score as Todd?
Because he would have got a 7.
Okay, so you reckon he drove? So you reckon he was driving better than Todd until he put it?
So the reality of the co-driver is the co-driver's got a job to do. So all we can do is measure them on that job. So his job is to do steady, consistent times, to not do anything stupid, not crash it, which he did, but just keep it on track. So I thought up until that point he was doing quite well. He was doing exactly what he was paid to do, which is really good for such a young guy on debut. Whereas Todd, I thought just, I don't know, since he got that pole position in Townsville, he's looked decidedly lethargic. Hopefully he goes away with this long break over summer and comes back with the vigour and the revitalised energy that we know he's got. I mean, he's one of the most upbeat people you'll ever meet. So hopefully he comes back with all of that.
Next BJR car up for grabs, Macaulay Jones. He scored a seventh and his co-driver also scored a seven.
Yeah, well, Tim Blanchard, we know he's a good journeyman. He's not going to do anything stupid, but he's not going to do anything spectacular. So he did exactly what he was paid to do, or in fact what he paid to do, because Cool Drivers is a family business. So they actually it's their show, so to speak, just running under BJR colours. Now, Macaulay Jones was one that I was tortured with trying to work out what to rate him. So I thought in the race he was doing quite well, but he did cop two penalties. Like, he knocked his teammate into the sand, and he did miss pit lane when he was given the meatball flag. So he
for the flapping door and, for the door. I mean, wouldn't you be pissed off? You take off and your door's the first lap. Your door's flapping open. Like, my God, guys, can't you have? Didn't you fix this from the last race or whatever? I'd be a bit pissed off myself.
Yeah, well, you would too. It was a problem that blighted them all weekend. So you would have thought they would have had it fixed by Sunday, and that the extra magnets that were put in place to hold the door closed clearly weren't enough. So, but funnily enough, changing doors fixed the job. So why didn't we try that in the first place? You can understand why Brad Jones was there looking, pulling out his hair, except he's very careful about pulling out hair.
sorry, Brad.
But he didn't look a happy boy, did he, Bradley? So, I felt for him. I really did feel for him. I thought they went up there with a good chance to do some really good results over the weekend. But Macca, you know, who was, of course, his son, I thought he drove well. He was good. He qualified okay. He was the first home of all the BJR cars. He would have got an 8 if he hadn't got the penalty. So I gave him a 7 because of it.
Fair enough. Next up, Jack Smith. You scored him a 6. Jack Perkins was his co-driver. You scored him an 8. Jack struggled.
Which Jack?
Sorry about that. Jack Smith.
The two Jacks. We'll call them
Smithy.
We'll call
Smithy them struggled. Jacks. Yeah, Smithy struggled to all his mates. And Perks, really had a good journeyman weekend.
Yeah, Jack Perkins is a really good co-driver. I think he's shown what he can do. He was a former main game driver, obviously, but, comes with a huge racing pedigree and a lot of racing intelligence. So he was pretty good throughout the weekend, hence his 8. Whereas the other Jack Smith, I thought he struggled all weekend. So he gets a 6.
Okay. Nick Percat in the next BJR car, and his teammate was Thomas Randall. They both scored a 7. Nick Percat obviously wasn't happy about being disqualified from the top 10 shootout, but that's the way it goes. But Thomas Randall, he was basically just trying to get a Randall was trying to get a handle on the car that was kind of not right all weekend.
Yeah, I don't think he got a fair crack at it at any point in time. I mean, they had so many troubles in that car. They changed coils here and there. So I think they changed 2 in the race. They changed at least 1 in practice. Had power steering dramas, all sorts of other issues. So really, really tough weekend for a co-driver when you're not going to get really good clean laps and your main driver hasn't had enough time to sort out the car at the same time. So I thought he did okay. So he gets the 7. Nick Percat, his shootout lap was stunning. Was a really good lap. It's a pity they were 2 kilograms underweight and that he lost it. But that's not his fault, so to speak. But he drove that lap so well that, if you were doing it just on shootout, he would have got a 9. And then in the race, there were just, so many dramas. You wouldn't get a handle on where they were. And I remember 6,322 laps behind the leaders after 420 pit stops. The cause of Brad Jones' frustration, I think.
That's one of the two pit stops a lap. But, yeah, anyway, I get that. Okay. First of the Walkinshaw cars, or Walkinshaw Andretti United. And Chaz Mostert scored a 9. Also, Warren Luffy's co-driver scored a 9. It's pretty good points.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. I thought they were really good all weekend. You know, Chaz was on his game. He had speed. He had enough aggression in the races. He was poking and prodding at Van Gisbergen for a while, but, you know, just couldn't find a way through. So I thought he raced really well and he had great speed. And it's really good to see that team and the evolutionary steps they've taken this year. And a lot of it's got to do with Chaz's input and the life that he brings to the place, the energy that he gives and the happiness that he brings with that stupid blue hairdo and his TV commentary work that he does, you know, back to you, Scafie, and all that stuff. So he's really good character for the sport. And I think the guys have, you know, really like him there. And what else can you say about Warren Luff? I mean, 6 podiums out of the last 9 starts at Bathurst. He is the ultimate co-driver.
He's the magic man for Bathurst, I tell you.
He is, isn't he? And he's a really nice bloke too. So I think it's great to see. I always like it when the good guys do well. And clearly what he does with Dreamworld and the stunt car driving and the sliding and things up there helps him. He was good all weekend as well. So, you know, I thought they were a good combination and probably watch out for them next year.
Okay. Next up, Walkinshaw Andretti United. Bryce Fullwood, you scored a seven. Kurt Kostecki, his co-driver, scored a 6. Bryce was up and down, crashed in the race. Right, so I could see you got a 7. Yep. Kurt, 6. You're not too sure how Kurt went?
No, not overly. I don't think he did anything spectacular. He didn't do anything really bad. He just did what he did. And to me, that's either a 6 or a 7. And I thought, you know, out of the 3 Kostekis, he had the best car to play with and he got the worst result. So, you know, on the Kostecki rating, he comes last. But learning weekend again. I mean, it's only his second race up there, so he's going to grow, as is Bryce Fullwood. I mean, he's very young in his career, a bit inconsistent. He was really quick in one practice session. He missed the shootout, which he was pretty disappointed with, but should have made the shootout based on his car and his teammate's car. So you lose a little bit there. And then, of course, you crash in the race. So, you know, you're going to chop points out there. So I probably could have even dropped him to 6 if I was feeling in a bad mood. But I'm in a happy mood today, Nev.
Fair enough. The Erebus cars. First up is Anton Di Pasquale and Brody Kostecki. Anton, you gave an 8, and Brody Kostecki, you gave a 9. You obviously loved his drive.
Oh, wasn't it magnificent? It's the first time. There's only two or three times in this whole thing where the co-driver outrates his main driver. And I thought Brody Kostecki was just really, really good. I mean, he was so good he bluffed Jamie Wincup into hitting the wall. So you're talking a guy who's barely raced in supercars versus a guy who's, you know, got 7 championships and 4 Bathurst wins, and he's so worried him he hit the wall. So amazing effort, and so defensive. Like, that car had no straight line speed. They were getting monstered in a straight line, yet they held it together. And Brody's stuff in particular I thought was very special. Anton was also really good at the defensive part of it, but he's a more accomplished driver and probably could have got a little bit more out of him in terms of the mongrel that Brody showed.
Well, I like Brody because he actually raced. He didn't just get over for people to pass him. He actually made people pass him. And I know they talk about Bathurst's endurance race, da-da-da-da-da, but if everybody gets over for everybody else, apart from the last 30 laps, it's boring. And why do we have 131 laps? If we're waiting for the last 30, why don't we just have 30 laps in the shootout and call the rest of whatever? So I really like the fact that Brody went, nah, you're going to get past me, mate. I'm not going to let you do this. And you're going to have to race me. And he raced people all day, didn't put it in the fence, right? And where some people are going, oh, we're racing too early. Oh, crash, bang, you know. It's like, what the hell? What's going on with some of these drivers' minds?
But the clearest message from this race was that track position was everything. You couldn't pass because of the aero wash, and Brody Kostecki didn't give up his spots easily. Like, if you wanted to get past him, you had to work.
That's my point.
That's a race driver. That's a race driver, not a pussy. He was great.
He was good.
He needs to be in the main game next year, so we should start the Brody Kostecki for something or other.
I like that.
Maybe he'll drive the Erebus car or something.
I like that. Okay. Well, next up for the Erebus drivers, David Reynolds and Will Brown. Dave Reynolds got a 6 and Will Brown got a 7. Dave just didn't look comfortable at all weekend.
No. We expected so much, you know, reunited with his long-lost engineer, all the stories, you know, his past Pathos performance have been awesome. But this weekend, he still wasn't there. So whether it's the fact that he's been in lockdown and travelling on the road for so long, or whether the car's just really bad. I mean, we know it was down in straight line speed, but, you know, wasn't
good. I'm hearing he had engine problems. He's down on power in the engines, in the engine department. And I think it could have been a little bit like that for Erebus all weekend.
Oh, no, both Erebus cars were down on power, which beats me how you do that. I mean, they buy their engines from Walkinshaw, so
they're thinking the same.
Yeah, how can you buy your engines off somebody and be that worse? So something was wrong there. Something was wrong at Erebus, Penrite Racing or whatever you want to call them. But, and Dave just kind of showed that. I think, you know, we saw him smile about 2 times for the whole weekend and the rest of the time he was frowning. Whereas Will Brown, I thought, was really quick at times, but, you know, just didn't give me enough of that Brody Kostecki mongrel in the race.
Okay, well, we're into the Tickford 4 cars now. James Courtney is first up. You're giving him a 7th. His co-driver, Brock Feeney, you've also given him a 7th. Brock Feeney was pretty much a solid learning weekend for him. How do you rate James?
James, I thought, was quite good. We probably could have got a little bit more out of him. I mean, he made the shootout, which was nice, but the lap wasn't so crash hot. And during the race, they were one of the ones that just suddenly weren't in contention. You don't know why, they just weren't. They dropped a few spots here and there through the pit stop windows and all of those sort of things and just drifted off contention, possibly because they're paired with the number 6 car in the boom. So, you know, you have to do a different pit strategy or you're going to end up double stacking. And, I don't know how they just drifted out of it, but they did.
Okay, next up.
Oh, I can't go any more than a 7 if you're drifting out of it.
Yeah, well, that's I like that. Next up, Jack LeBrock. He scored him a 6. Look, he just had an off weekend, I reckon. But James Moffat, his co-driver, you scored him a 9. He starred in the car, a 9. Fill me in on those details.
He was awesome. He was awesome. You look at those practice sessions where he was top of the times in the car. So, yeah, James drove incredibly well all weekend, including in the race. And when Jack was feeling sick because of the fumes that was coming into his helmet, they had enough confidence to throw James back in the car because he'd done such a good job. So that's the beauty of having a really good co-driver. It opens it up when something goes wrong. You can't blame Jack for the fumes that were coming into the car, and clearly it was affecting him all the way through that last stint that he did, which was from, you know, that lap 115 onwards type mark, that he wasn't on song himself. But I didn't see the speed that I expected through practice from him or qualifying. Yeah, he was the only Tickford car not to make the shootout, and I think he should have been there.
Okay. Next up, Lee Holdsworth and Michael Caruso both scored an 8. I liked the look at this car all weekend. I was always keeping an eye for it.
Well, you tipped it to win, didn't you, if my memory's correct?
One of those, yeah. I actually thought they were up there with a chance.
Yeah, that qualifying run of Lee's on Friday afternoon was awesome. Came out in the shootout and the car just wasn't right. You know, something was wrong, whether they had too low tyre pressures, too high tyre, something was just not working and it didn't switch on. So instead of starting the race on pole or second or right up near the front, he ended up in 5th on the grid. And they, again, like the other Tickford car of Courtney and things, they were just driving along, you know, they weren't doing anything ridiculous, nothing kind of seemed to go wrong or anything. And you looked at it and you thought, these guys are in the bottom half of the top 10 all of a sudden. And I don't know how. You know, I think it's just one of those quirks in this race now that we've got the aero wash era where people can't pass, is that you might have a really fast car, but if you've lost track position for whatever reason, you're not going to get it back. You know, you're stuck at their pace. And they were really cruel by that this weekend. But the two drivers, I thought they did good jobs. Lee, if he'd managed to do the good shootout lap, would have done a stunning job, but he didn't. So he did a good job for 8.
Next up, Tickford Racing, the last one, the main one, Cameron Waters, you scored him a 9. I'm not surprised. And Will Davison, you scored him a 9. Not surprised about that one either.
They were both good, weren't they? I mean, Cam was sensational all weekend. He was fast right from the minute the car hit the track. You know, what, fastest in the first session, fastest in the third. Will was in the top five in the second one. So by the end of day one, they were serious contenders. And we knew that, which is why we chose them to be our Bathurst preview drivers. We knew they were serious contenders as soon as that driver lineup was announced. And they were really good. The problem is that the car in the wet was not that nice. You could tell, and they just dropped that spot to Shane Van Gisbergen, and there was just no way they were ever getting it back. Unless the Giz had made a mistake, Cam wasn't going to be able to pass him. So really good effort, really good run to the podium or the second spot. Would love to have seen them win the race because I think it's a good story. Not that the story of the winner is any worse, but it was a good story as well, and it's just a pity when the fastest car doesn't get the chocolates.
Okay. Red Bull Racing Holden team, whatever it's called. Jamie Wincup and his co-driver, Craig Lowndes. Jamie Wincup, you scored a 6. I probably think I know what that's for. And Craig Lowndes, he got a 7.
Well, it was never an easy weekend for these guys. The car didn't look nice. It didn't look balanced at any point in time. You know, it was very taily, it was snappy, and it was biting at them. And you saw that particularly in Jamie's shootout lap when he just lost the tail in the chase. But even earlier in that lap, you saw the tail jumping and out on them. So the car wasn't that good, and they never managed to get on top of it in the same way that the sister car did. Jamie, of course, that was a silly mistake, and he knows it. So I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know, because Jamie would be kicking himself still for that error. And, for that, he can't get any much more than a 6. Craig just seemed off the pace. He didn't seem like Craig Lowndes until, of course, the race started. And then he was able to go consistently on his course. But, you know, I think we're clearly, coming towards the end of Craig Lowndes' career. He's been a stellar champion. And he proved again in the race that he can race okay. But what's he going to be like in 12 months' time with another 12 months of rust?
Who knows? Time and in the fullness of time, all will be revealed.
Yeah, the beauty of him is though that he's such a naturally talented racing car driver that he can pull something out of his ear whenever he feels like it.
Pulls it out of his ear.
Yep. I can't say the other word. Oh no, can't we? Pulls it out of his ass.
He's got so much
natural talent that, and that doesn't just disappear overnight. And as I say, you know, in the practice sessions, he was kind of nowhere, but come the races, he was faster and he was consistent.
Okay. Next up, Shane Van Gisbergen with co-driver Garth Tander. You scored them both a 9. I'm surprised there wasn't a 10 in there considering they were race winners.
Yeah, well, you don't just get 10 for winning the race. You get 10 for doing everything perfectly. And
I would have given him a 10 for that wet period.
Oh, yeah, well, that's why I got a 9. clearly the car was good, but he mucked up the shootout. So don't forget that. He could have been on pole or close if he hadn't mucked that up. And he said that when they were talking to him after his shootout lap and they were talking nicely about it, he said, oh, no, I stuffed it up. And he's, good drivers are hard on themselves and they know when they haven't done their best job. In the race, it was really only 5 laps of brilliance in the rain. And then the rest of it was just not making a mistake because he was never going to get past. The aero wash said even if Cam Waters was half a second lap faster, he wasn't getting by him. And so he just did what he had to do. Great to see him win the race. He's clearly one of the cleverest and most attuned racing car drivers that we have in this country. And I remember talking to Dutto after the race, and Dutto said, the scary thing is he's not at his peak yet. So he reckons we got more to come from the Giz. And Garth Tander, like his drive, the ability to double stint early and do all of those things, it just opened up the race for them. And he was probably the best one or two of the co-drivers for the whole weekend.
DJR Team Penske, or actually it's DJR Team Nobody. Fabian Coulthard.
It was Team Penske the weekend.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's the official. Fabian Coulthard, 8, and his co-driver, Tony Dalberto, also an 8.
Yeah, nothing spectacular all weekend, was it? They were there. Fabian qualified in 7th, which isn't too bad. And they finished 4th, which isn't too bad, but it's nothing special. Fabian's drive in the rain was pretty good. His car seemed to be quite nice when Scotty McLaughlin's car clearly wasn't. So he made some ground in the rain, which was good. And Tony D'Alberto seemed a little slow at first, but, you know, with the laps he got his speed back. And I thought by the end of his spell on race day, he was back to where he was the year before, which was a pretty good co-driver.
Okay, last up, Scott McLaughlin with his co-driver, Tim Slade. Scott, you also scored him an 8, and Tim Slade, you scored a 7. Now, I'm surprised that Scott got an 8 and the same as Fabian, considering Fabian did better in the wet and finished ahead of him on the track at the end.
Yeah, you can say that. But at the end of the day, it's all about what the car was like in the wet. Clearly, Scott's car was not nice in the wet. But, you know, he did make up spaces in the latter part of the race. So, you know, he was well down the order. They suffered really badly because Tim Slade had to do that extra spell in the car because they missed their pit window when the safety car came out by one lap. So one lap further and they were okay. And I said at the time when that happened, that just cost them the race.
Why don't they just stay out there on the safety car, stay out, get that one lap and then come in. Sure, they would have been at the back of the traffic in the thing, but they were never, ever going to get out of that. So they decided to bring Tim Slade in early and was still at the back anyway. Okay, off kind of thing. But I just reckon they should have done that.
No, because I think that would have cost them more, I think, in the long run because of the inability to pass on the track. So even if you were behind a guy who was, you know, significantly slower, you're still going to struggle to get past them. You've only got to look at the Brody Kostecki to understand that part of it. So they made the right decision what they had to do. Where they cocked it up was that I don't think they had enough confidence in Tim Slade to do the job that he had to do. So they hedged their bets and that's where they lost. You know, so they gambled on the fact that the safety cars would fall their way or not fall their way, whatever. They gambled that they could cover the lack of speed from Tim.
So you reckon the mistake was making Scott start the race instead of Tim?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Because he couldn't make enough ground. I mean, he got 8 seconds on Cam Waters. That wasn't enough for where he was at that particular point in the race. So he had to do more and he didn't.
No, okay. Well, that's the end of our list. Any standouts in that list for you? Any honourable mentions?
Oh, no, as I said, I think the Brody Kostecki drive was awesome. And I think a couple of the co-drivers showed they should be in the main game still. I mean, James Moffat showed he had enough left in the tank. Will Davison showed he had enough, but he will have a co-main drive next year. We know that. He will be there. Garth Tander was also good. And I think, you know, they're the standouts to me, and that's why they all got 9s. And there were a few people who weren't disappointing as such, but just didn't set the world on fire.
So who were the co-drivers on the way out? You still see, you talked about some co-drivers still had it. Who are the ones you felt like didn't quite have it? Or
so the ones who disappointed me, I think, is what you're asking for there. I think I was a bit disappointed with Tim Slade. I expected a lot more from him. I thought he would be much more switched on and much more speedy as such. I thought Craig showed some signs that were a little bit worrying.
Lounsey, you're talking about?
Yeah. I just expected a little bit more from him, and I didn't really get that, which I was a bit disappointed with. But you know, across the board, we saw some good things. I mean, Jack Perkins was good again.
James Moffat was good.
James Moffat was awesome. You know, as I say, that he was just really, really good in, across the weekend. And, you know, the disappointing ones were really just the rookies who were learning their way. And all you want from a rookie is to not crash. You just want them to get through the weekend without crashing the car so that they get all of the laps that they need to keep on learning at that place.
Well, I must admit, to me, the story of the driver ratings is the co-drivers pretty much kept their noses clean, and it was the main game drivers that caused most of the incidents. I'm not saying they caused them all, but I was surprised how well the co-drivers drove this year.
Yeah, no, they were good, but everybody was good. I mean, we know that just to get up there, you've got to have a serious amount of talent. So, you know, we can't doubt any of them and any of their abilities. So they did. They kept their noses clean. They did a good job. We probably want, as people watching, to see a few of them do worse. So we want to see a bit more chaos, just like we wanted to see a bit more rain, but all of those things, and we didn't really get it. But, you know, it's just one of those days, I think, where people were just being tired at the end of what is a very tiring season.
Okay. A bit of crystal ball, and this is for Bathurst 2021. Let's say rumours are correct and Anton Di Pasquale is going to DJR and taking Scott McLaughlin's place. Do you think that Brody Kostecki would follow Anton in as the co-driver for Bathurst, or will they keep Tim Slade? I'm thinking Brody. Do you take Brody across as a co-driver?
Oh, I think Erebus will be working hard to keep Brody there. He works with them quite solidly across the team. So he works with them in their E-Series stuff as well. So, yeah, he gives them a little bit, adds a little bit to the tank that that they can't afford to lose as such. And I think he's just a good person to have around as well. So I think they'll try to keep him there. I think if Anton does move, I think Will Brown is probably the guy that's going to get that drive. So it'll be Dave Reynolds and Will Brown. Brody will be there as a co-driver though.
But you know that Brody and Anton have the same manager.
Yeah, but that doesn't always tie you to them.
I understand.
It probably helped get Brody in the door, but I think he's done enough there for them to want him. But who knows? I mean, you know, DJR's under a different world now. Like, there's no more Team Penske to control the ship, so maybe they can go for some people who aren't as corporately polished as Penske likes. Not that saying that Brody Kostecki's not corporately polished, by the way, but, you know, they might be looking for something different. They might be looking to say, well, you know, what are we going to do? As I say, if you said to yourself, you know, did I get what I wanted out of my co-drivers and I was DJR, you might say no.
Well, the other fact is that we'll probably be able to get internationals back. So there's another mix to the pie that we didn't have this year. Or another ingredient.
And what I'm hoping the best ingredient for next year, if everything falls right, is a wildcard entry for Scott McLaughlin and Will Power. But it's a bit of a pity that Team Penske's pulled out, because that would have been a dead set goer if it had been the case. So now it's a 50-50.
Yeah, well, yeah. Watch this space. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, yeah, we'll see it all shape up. But, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens over the next few months, because we've got the Bathurst 500. So it'll be the two 250 races in early February. So we'll see the guys back there then, and then we'll see how people shape up for the 1,000.
Okay. The final points tally for the year, the season, yada, yada, yada. First up, no, surprise, surprise, Scott McLaughlin, total of 84 points. In second place, Jamie Wincup on 76. Cameron Waters also on 76. Then in fourth place, Chaz Mostert on 75. On equal 75 points. In fifth is Nick Percat. Shane Van Gisman on 74 in sixth. In seventh, Andre Heimgardner on 69. Scott Pye also on 69 in eighth. Mark Winterbottom in ninth on 69. Fabian Coulthard in 10th on 69 also. So there's three guys all on 69. Anton Tipisquale is 68. And in 12th, Lee Holdsworth on 66. We'll have the full list up there on our Facebook page if you want to check the rest out. But what do you see the story there in that total?
So what's interesting to me, obviously, if you look at it, our first, second and third in the points are first, second and third in the championship. So that's a pretty good return as well. So obviously Cam jumped Jamie in the championship, but they were on equal points. So that's interesting in itself. But then for me, it's the ones who gained or lost. So remember when we spoke at the start of the season about how we were doing this, we worked out where we felt each of the drivers was with their cars, and we gave them a seating or a ranking. So we obviously had Scott McLaughlin seated at number one, and he finished number one. So he's got a 0 point gain. We had Jamie Wincup seated number three, and he finished in second. But then if you jump down the order, like Cam Waters jumped three spots on his seating, which is interesting. Andre Heimgartner jumped four spots on his seating, so he's gone from 11 to 7, which is good. Scotty Pye went from 14 to 8, so he had a 6-spot gain. Teammate Frosty went from 13 to 9, which was a 4-spot gain. And Fabian Coulthard went from 16 to 10 for a 6-spot gain. But that said, they all finished on 69 points. So those things could juggle around a little bit. It could be that, you know, Scotty Pye went from 14th to 9th or whatever. So there's a bit of flexibility in there, but the bottom line is they all improved really well across the season. But the biggest losers for the year, Dave Reynolds dropped 17 spots from seeding to where he ended up in the races in our ratings. So that's a really big hit for a guy who's got so much talent. Todd Hazelwood dropped 6 spots. James Courtney dropped 5, but that's the legacy of the start of the season. So we expect to see him a lot stronger next year and probably back to where his seating is. But the other big dropper was Shane Van Gisbergen, who dropped four spots on his seeding from second to sixth. So to me, that's the interesting part of who shifted where and who moved to where.
Okay. Yes, I see a lot of that. So how does the seedings work for 2021? The finish position in the championship?
No, no, we'll have to look at who's got what next year. So, you know, who, what driver moves to where, so forth, and what we believe. So where they rated this year is not necessarily where they'll start. So Shane Van Gisbergen will not be seeded sixth at the start of next year.
So in 2021, we'll be doing a special show on the seedings of the drivers before we get into their points, because I think it's important that people know how we seed them.
Absolutely. And the reasons for it are interesting as well, because clearly Scott McLaughlin's not going to be there. So who's going to be our new number one seed? That to me is the interesting discussion that we've got to get through. And part of that's going to be thinking, what sort of car are they going to have under them? You know, so let's, yeah, will the DJR cars drop off without Penske? Can the Red Bull Racing Holden, no, they're not a Holden Racing team anymore, so Red Bull Racing, can they get on top of these cars that have caused them, you know, concern for the year, where they've been inconsistent, up and down? You know, and where will Cam Waters be? Yeah, given the way he's finished this season, he's got to be seriously highly rated. But then, you know, do we really think Dave Reynolds is the 21st best driver in this field?
Nah.
Yeah, so they will shuffle around a bit, and yeah, we'll come to it, and we'll give you all the reasons why, and maybe you can even give us your thoughts as well.
Okay, Clarkie, thanks for joining me. I just want to do a shout out to our friends at Supercar Extra magazine. It's on sale at the newsagent. So also the people that brought out the program, the official program that you heard us talk about so much in earlier episodes. But if you want to keep up with the latest of what's going in supercars in the off season, they're still bringing out magazines. So get them in the newsagents, or go to supercarextra.com.au and subscribe to it online, which it seems to be the way it is in this new COVID world order. Also, I wanted to talk about, or I wanted to let folks know that we are bringing out shows during the off season, and we're looking at changing our name. We don't know what it's going to be at the moment, but keep an eye out for that, or an ear out for that. We will change our name at some stage, so don't be too surprised when there's a different name.
It'll be less of a mouthful.
Yes. Thanks, listeners. Really appreciate you spending time with us as we give you the driver ratings. Clarkie, thanks for joining me, and appreciate the time. I'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Deb. It's been a blast the whole season. So it's been a tough year, obviously, without being able to get to the tracks and so forth. But thanks to all of the teams, particularly the Melbourne teams who made the sacrifice to keep the show on the road for us. And I really hope they enjoy their holiday. We'll